What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Trump's sweeping executive orders are targeting some of our most marginalized community members across the nation. What can be done at the local level to fight back? That's what we're talking about this morning with newly elected County Supervisor Nikki Fortunato Bass, the supervisor for District 5 and a former Oakland City Council member. Good morning, Supervisor Bass. It's going to take me a minute to get Supervisor Bass and not Councilmember Bass out of my mouth. You have to forgive me for that. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be here.
Okay, let's jump right into it. You have put forth a proposal that's going to be presented on Thursday for an ad hoc committee called Alameda Together for All. Walk us through the purpose of the committee.
Sure. Well, I actually announced when I was sworn in that I wanted to make sure the county was being very proactive to address the policies that Trump is putting forward. So on January 28th, the board actually approved the committee. It's called Alameda County Together for All. And Thursday, we are having our first meeting. And your listeners, and you know very well, the shock and awe that is happening from the White House and the fear that is happening. We need to combat that fear with coordination, accurate information, and ensuring that our county services continue to reach the people who need it. So the committee is going to coordinate a proactive response to protect, support, and lift up our communities who are impacted by the federal policies and budgets that we are dealing with right now.
There's three specific bullets under the purpose, Supervisor Bass. So the first one, protect Alameda County communities and strengthen county policies, systems, and practices for a coordinated response to anticipated federal policies and budgets. Which policies need to be strengthened, and what systems and practices do you have in your head at this moment? I know it'll grow as the work grows, but what are you thinking there? What do we already have that can be strengthened?
Sure, you know, the one of the reasons I think it's so important to have a committee that is focused on what is happening right now in our political landscape is that we really hear directly from the community that's impacted, and we also hear directly from the county. So on Thursday, we'll be doing a landscape of what we know is happening. We'll hear from our federal lobbyists. We'll also hear from the sheriff and our public health director. We'll hear from folks from the reproductive justice community, the LGBTQ community, and the immigrant and refugee community. One of the things we know for sure, just from, you know, being out in the community, is that people may not be accessing education. They may not be sending their kids to school. People may not be accessing healthcare or disenrolling in healthcare. So at the county, I am very concerned in making sure that people feel safe accessing healthcare, accessing education, accessing legal resources, tenant legal protections, for example, as well as not being fearful of any type of law enforcement activity because it could potentially be ICE. So we want to make sure that we are assessing what the budget impacts will be, as well as how to address misinformation with accurate information and resources.
Supervisor Bass, you brought up the sheriff, so I'm going to segue to that part of my question. There is history with the Sheriff's Department of collaborating with ICE to hold immigrants in detention. How are you going to prevent collaboration between the Sheriff's Department and ICE now?
Excellent question. You know, we do have the sheriff coming to our meeting tomorrow. There is existing policy, which is zero contact policy with immigration officials, except when a criminal warrant has been signed by a judge. And so the sheriff should not be taking immigration status or the lack of immigration documents into account in doing its work. And that is something tomorrow that we want to make sure we fully understand, so that the sheriff is clear what the policy is and the community is also clear.
Right, and go ahead.
If we have to advocate for additional protections, we certainly will do that. We want to make sure that you know, no matter what folks are doing, going to work, school, healthcare, church, what have you, being out, you know, doing whatever you did before the election, that you feel safe and secure being able to do that. And we want to make sure we are really looking at the policies that will help our communities feel safe and feel like they belong.
Yeah, one of those policies would be in direct defiance, right, of one of his executive orders, which is if you're even accused, going to your point, of a crime, that's grounds for you to be held indeterminately. So
So
we'd be
what?
asking the sheriff to, I'm sorry, we'd be asking the sheriff to say no to the federal government, which they should. It's just, it's a violation of federal law at this point,
So
or will
one
be.
of the things that I know I want to get clarity on is that county employees, including sheriff deputies, are not under any obligation whatsoever to do ICE's work. And one of the immediate things that we can do, and the board had a hearing in our Public Protection Committee already in December, one of the things that we can do is ensure that individuals have due process. And specifically, the Public Defender's Immigration Unit needs more staff, needs more capacity in order to ensure anyone who might be held because of immigration issues has their due process and has access to a public defender. So that's one of the most immediate steps the county could take.
Right, and in my opinion, we have one of the top public defender offices in the county. And yes, Brendan Woods and his team definitely need more resources. This is my second of advocacy for their office.
Indeed.
Supervisor Boss, is there precedence on the Board of Supervisors for this kind of committee?
Excellent question. There absolutely is. Under Trump's first administration, it was the late Supervisor Wilma Chan and the late Supervisor Richard Valle who created an ad hoc committee on immigrants and refugees. And so we are definitely learning from that experience. In fact, my chief of staff and my legislative director and public safety lead worked for those supervisors. So we really want to make sure we're not working from scratch, that we're really building from what we had worked on in the past. And in fact, we had during that first administration a network called the Alameda County Immigration Legal Education Partnership. So there's a coalition of community groups that is working around the clock to make sure that partnership is robust, that we have a rapid response hotline coming on board. And in addition to that, there was a comprehensive report that was done on how the county can really lift up its welcoming county status and ensure that we have the infrastructure and policies to ensure that immigrants and refugees are welcomed, have access to services, and can be an integrated part of our community. So there definitely is precedent, and we're really kicking into gear, into high gear, everything we did before. Plus, I'm very intentional with my co-chair, my vice chair, Supervisor Elisa Marquez, making sure we're looking at how the trans community is being impacted and how the federal administration is trying to erase the trans community, as well as reproductive justice and gender-affirming health care. There's a lot that is under attack, and we want to be as proactive as we can.
I'm glad you brought up our trans relatives. With Trump's, I was going to use an expletive that I'm not allowed to use, with his order around trans folks and asserting that the falsehood that there's only two genders, that there's a requirement, right, of all government agencies to make sure that there's only male, female listed everywhere. In addition to that, where else do you see trans folks that are in our community, in the county offices, et cetera, are going to need?
Well, as it relates to access to healthcare, you know, there's been a long struggle, of course, to ensure gender-affirming healthcare. And I know that there are organizations both in the community and within the county that are making sure that that access to healthcare can be delivered, that people don't feel afraid to come forward and get the healthcare they need. or get access to things like changing your name. We will have tomorrow Joe Hawkins, the co-founder of the LGBTQ Center, to share with us the impacts that our queer community, trans community is experiencing so that we can take action together. In addition to that, I know the LGBTQ Legal Defense Fund is also very active in defending the rights of our siblings. So this is really a moment where I want the county, under the leadership of myself and Supervisor Marquez, to really listen, and not only listen, but to act.
There's risk in this work, with Trump, specifically with Trump threatening to cut federal funding to communities, cities, counties, states, et cetera, that create sanctuary.
Absolutely.
What are you bracing yourself for? Yeah.
Well, the main thing we are concerned about is funding. You know, just like all of the organizations, including nonprofit organizations and health organizations that rely on federal funds, you know, we are really trying to get a handle on exactly what is going to happen. The county budget, as some people know, is over $4 billion. A good portion of that is federal funding. And so we are very proactive in, looking at what funding we currently have, what might be at risk. And I think what's important about this, especially in the Bay Area in California, is that county governments, as well as the community, very importantly, is coming together to say, we will not be complicit in what Trump is doing. In fact, we are going to push back and protect and lift up our communities. And so it's one of those moments, more so than the first administration, where we have to come together and really make sure that people feel safe, secure, and feel like they belong.
Governor Gavin Newsom has put himself out there, and for a minute now, you know, as the defender of all things that Trump wants to kill, and is, you know, nationally preparing for, you know, a square off between the two of them in terms of his refusal to follow Trump's policies across the state. What alliances with the governor's office have you, or do you think you will make?
Well, we are certainly looking at our regional delegation, our statewide delegation, as being very important. Personally, I've had an opportunity to talk with our Congresswoman Latifah Simon, Attorney General Rob Bonta, Senator Ira Geen. Have not yet had a conversation with the governor's office directly, but we are working to make sure that we've got a robust delegation here in the East Bay that can really defend and protect our communities from these impacts. You know, access to healthcare, education, going to work, and even just feeling a sense of belonging and identity, that those things are really important. And more than ever, we need to come together and, you know, push back on what is happening.
Supervisor Boss, are you seeing similar efforts across the nation? Are you in conversations with other governments, be that state, county, or local, about what they're preparing to do?
Absolutely. I was just at a convening of the California Working Families Party, for example. There's also another group that's national called Local Progress. I am in touch with other county supervisors who are doing similar work, and also city councils. So this is definitely a moment where we are looking at how do we protect, again, your rights to access healthcare and education. At the city level in LA, for example, I know one of my colleagues is looking at workplace protections, because we know from the past immigration raids in the workplace are a big threat. So there is more and more collaboration, certainly among government level officials.
Even in the midst of the Trump administration horrors, life is going to keep lifing, which means we're going to continue to have the same types of crises, you know, now that we've been wrestling with for the last few years. I'm wondering about, given resources and resource constraints, what kind of community partnerships are you seeking to develop, for example, around expanding non-carceral response to community crisis, right? Around a range of issues. We're going to need some mutual aid, and it's probably best if folks on the ground in the community are in conversation with folks like you.
Absolutely. You know, again, learning from what we did under the first Trump administration, one of the things that we are working on is making sure that ACLIP, the Alameda County Immigration Legal Education Partnership, has the resources, the capacity, the volunteers that it needs to do rapid response. And so I do want to share with your listeners the website. It's acilep.org. That will be a hub to get resources, especially for the immigrant and refugee community. We want to make sure that we're able to verify any ICE activity, create safety if there is verified activity, and also provide legal defense support and resources. So that's one important resources. And like you said, mutual aid is so important. There's a host of organizations that we hope to be building with through our county committee, Alameda County Together for All, which is meeting tomorrow at 10. So we will be having, we'll be meeting twice a month and hearing from folks on the ground as well as government officials so that we can partner together.
I know that this is, I know for me in the other part of my work, it feels all consuming. And yet, like I mentioned, right, the things that we were wrestling with before, we are still wrestling with. In your first 100 days, Supervisor Boss, what else are you trying to tackle?
Ooh, excellent question. Well, you know, I have to remind folks that one of the reasons I ran for this seat when I was in the middle of my term on Oakland City Council is to ensure that we have much more focus and collaboration between our city and the county. And so in that regard, economic development is really critical. So I am focused on making sure that the county's portion of the Coliseum deal can move forward so the city and the county together can create economic development and community benefits that will lift up not only East Oakland, but the entire region. Homelessness and housing security is incredibly important. Folks might have heard about Measure W. That's the county sales tax that has been in the courts the past 4 years. We are hopeful that it will clear the courts and there will be $500 million available for general purposes and hopefully largely homeless services. How the county works with Oakland and other cities to shelter our unsheltered residents is going to be extremely important. So that's another thing I'm focused on, as well as implementing Measure C. This is another county sales tax that was also tied up in the courts for 4 years. There's significant resources available for early childhood education, including family childcare providers, really critical work. So I'll be working to implement that measure to make sure that our childcare providers have the living wages and resources they need so that we can care for our kids.
Getting just a little bit technical in my last couple of minutes with you, I think a lot of people are confused about how the relationship between the county and cities work, and I'll just, because it's my city, say Oakland. What does the interplay look like there? What is possible? What is restricted by, you know, ordinances, this, that, or other?
Well, you know, to sort of simplify it, the county can be thought of as our social safety net. So a big role of the county is addressing poverty and social services. So, you know, it is where you can get access to healthcare, access to food assistance, some rental assistance. You know, it's really sort of set up to make sure that those most in need have access to services. And that's why our budget is so tied to what's happening in DC, because a lot of our budget is federal funding. The city, on the other hand, provides much more of the visible services that people might notice, from you know, public safety through police and fire services, maintaining our streets and sidewalks, our parks, our rec centers, that type of thing, as well as your planning permits and economic development, planning to build affordable housing.
Last question, Supervisor Boss. What has it been like for you since you've been in your new position? Do you see opportunities or obstacles differently now than when we last had you on the show shortly after you were elected?
Well, it's certainly been a shift. You know, one of the things I will say is that there's a reason why a lot of people aren't very clear on what the county does, and that's because our board meetings, for example, are Tuesdays at 9:30 in the morning, and our agendas are usually published Thursday evening or Friday morning. And unlike the city of Oakland, where we have a public committee that puts things on the agenda, we don't have that same type of public process for what gets onto our agenda. So I am certainly hoping that over the course of my tenure on the Board of Supervisors, I'll be able to share more about what the county does, how it works, and how folks can engage. And I'm chairing this Alameda County Together for All committee specifically to engage folks in how the county's resources and services can be provided to our community despite what's happening in DC.
All right, Supervisor Bass, I've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.